This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or artificial nonsense. It's just pure goodness in every pouch. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. That's Symbiotica.
The Berwyn Mountains have always been a liminal place, a place caught between worlds, where prehistoric humans once roamed and bizarre tales of high strangeness are woven into the land. Caught between the Welsh wilds of Snowdonia to the west and the borderlands of Wales and England to the east, it is a place where myth and magic simmer beneath the surface, where fact and fiction blur, hinting at something more. All cultures talk of other worlds, places beyond the one we know, and Welsh mythology is no different. Often such places like Kerr, the Sumerian land of the dead, or Hades of Greek mythology, are distinctly separate from the realm of the living. These were depictions of the afterlife, lands that only the dead could truly inhabit. The other world of Welsh mythology, or Arnoon as it is known, is something quite different. Not so much another plane, but another dimension, coexisting with ours and populated with other living creatures, existing in their own right. Arnoon, also called an oven, thought to derive from the Welsh word meaning deep in English, features prominently in the four branches of the Mabinogi, a collection of stories in prose dating back to the 11th century, considered to be the earliest of its kind in British literature. In the first branch, Arnoon is depicted as a paradisical land ruled over by a king named Arun and located somewhere in the kingdom of Defed, a former region of what is now southwest Wales. In the ancient poem, Prethi Anuvan, the spoils of Anuvan, thought to have originated sometime around 900 CE, an early iteration of the mythical legend King Arthur travels across the sea to this mysterious place. There, during his quest in search of a magical cauldron, we learn that Arnoon is also home to a race of fairy folk. And in the Welsh epic, Cad Gothi, in which the magician Gwydion does battle with King Arun of Arnoon, the citizens of the mystical land are depicted as something altogether different. They were wide-mawed beasts bearing 100 heads, and black-groined toads bearing 100 claws, or in other cases, mottled ridged serpents with 100 souls trapped inside the folds of their skin. Arnoon is variously depicted as being located on an island or somewhere deep in the earth, with a small number of gateways to this other world, said to be scattered across the four corners of the land. Over time, however, it became increasingly associated with the north of Wales. Writing in Wales and Arthurian legend, Roger Loomis declares, "In Arthur's time and before that, the people of South Wales regarded North Wales as preeminently the land of the fairy, In the popular imagination, that distant country was the abode of giants, monsters, magicians, and all the creatures of enchantment. Out of it came the fairies on their visits to the sunny lands of the south. And curiously, there is one place more than any other where it is said the bridge between our world and theirs is at its thinnest. That place is the Berwyn Mountains. You're listening to Unexplained, and I'm Richard MacLean Smith. In the evening of May 10th, 1973, a young couple was sitting in a car in Pike Hill, near Oldham in the northwest of England, when a strange craft came into view in the sky. The couple described it as being like a helicopter, complete with an exaggerated dome-shaped top and beams of red, green and white light shooting out from underneath it. They watched it hover for a moment over the hill, before it rotated slowly, shot up to 100 or so feet, and then disappeared. Around 50 similar sightings were seen over the next few months across central and northwest England. They were always the same, a helicopter seen moving slowly but with purpose, as if it was looking for something. With no official record of anything flying in the areas at the time, local police forces speculated that the mysterious craft was likely part of a criminal enterprise running illicit errands from London. Others suggested the helicopters were in fact delivering undercover CIA operatives drafted in by the UK government to try and destabilise the British trade union movement. It had been a fraught few years as the government battled with rising inflation and a global oil crisis, in turn bringing them into conflict with the National Union of Miners over stagnating wages in the coal industry. After a series of strikes and stalemates, with coal power accounting for roughly two-thirds of the country's electricity, the government made the drastic decision to impose a three-day week, restricting the use of electricity to only three consecutive days of the working week. It was for many an unsettling and unusual time that seemed to manifest even more unusual events. On January 15, 1974, police forces throughout central and north England were put on alert for a rogue helicopter seen moving about in the area. 3 days later, police received a report from an anonymous caller of a single bright light seen moving over the moors to the south of the Peak District, but nothing is found. Perhaps it is only in hindsight that we might determine these sightings to have any significance, when in fact such fleeting accounts were little more than overactive imaginations, tapping into the nation's troubled psyche at a time of such unsettling uncertainty. But soon, up on the slopes of the Berwyn Mountains' highest peak, something substantial would take place. A strange and mysterious event that remains to this day unexplained. In the evening of Wednesday, January 23rd, 1974, Anne Williams was settling down to watch TV when she spotted something in the darkness outside her front room window. Williams lived in Brodinham, situated at the northern edge of the Berwyn Mountains, where its rolling foothills could easily be seen from out the back of the house. It was a reasonably clear sky that night, awash with stars, but only the slightest hint of the new moon visible. But what Anne had seen was a bright light high up above the hills that was steadily dropping down from out of the sky, a lengthy golden tail shooting out from behind it. She watched, stunned, for what seemed like minutes as it fell, closer and closer toward the ground, pulsing as it went, until finally it disappeared behind the hills. It was followed by what sounded like an explosion, and then the ground began to shake. Police Sergeant Gwyn Williams was at home a few miles to the north in the town of Corwen when he heard the explosion too. Moments later, he felt the floor shift underneath him and watched with alarm as the walls began to shake, rattling a large mirror that was threatening to jump off its chain. Seconds later, Williams was out of the house and running into the street, convinced that a lorry must have crashed nearby. Outside, Williams looked in vain for any sign of an accident, but saw only the deathly quiet of the street, then the sound of another front door opening, and then another, as more and more neighbours appeared in their doorways, with a mixture of fear and confusion in their faces, as they looked out toward the mountains behind him. Following their gaze, Sergeant Williams turned to see a soft yellowish glow cresting a distant peak. It hung there for a moment before it faded away and the night returned. Down at the Gwynedd police station in Colwyn Bay, six officers and three support staff frantically worked the phones as more and more calls came in. One officer on duty, calling in from Llandithlow, also reported hearing the huge explosion and that lights were flashing on the slopes of Cader Bronwen, another of the Berwyn's peaks. It was his belief that something had just crashed onto the mountain. With police opening a major incident log, a flurry of calls went out to nearby RAF Valley Airfield and air traffic control towers, while local ambulance services were put on high alert. In Llandafell village, just prior to the explosion, Pat Evans was sat in her living room with her daughters, Diane and Tina, enjoying the latest episode of Alf Garnett's sitcom, Till Death Us Do Part. It was just after 8:30 p.m. when she got up to make a cup of tea in the kitchen and was also startled by the huge bang. With the ground shaking beneath her, a distressed Diane and Tina shouted through from the living room. "What the hell was that?" they asked. Running outside, the three of them looked out across the hills but found only the usual still night air. But as numerous neighbours began appearing in the street, each sharing their own account of the bizarre event, it was clear to Pat, an experienced nurse, that some kind of aircraft had just crashed. Realising how long it would take for any help to arrive, Pat jumped onto the phone and spent the next hour trying to get through to the police to offer any help she could. In the meantime, the sightings coming in to Gwynedd police station were beginning to get a little more unusual. One witness described seeing a bright red light, like coal fire, emanating from the object, as well as lights above and to the right, but also a light moving to the bottom of it that changed from white to yellow and back again, while another claimed to have seen what looked like a large fire burning on the mountainside. Finally, at roughly 9:30 p.m, Pat was eventually patched through to Colwyn Bay Police Station, where she was thanked for her offer of help and invited to drive up to the potential crash site to see what she could do. Pat replaced the receiver and looked across to Diane and Tina, both of whom were also trained in first aid. "Right," she said, "let's get in the car." As Pat and her daughters made their way up through the narrow, winding country lanes, as the darkling Berwyn Mountains loomed up above them to the east, Diane and Tina were suddenly gripped with fear at what they were about to find. A light rain had begun to fall as Pat did her best to reassure them, keeping one eye on the pitch black lane as she feverishly scanned the horizon for any sign of the downed plane. It was approaching 10 p.m. when the car reared up into the top of the hills and the road began to level out. All about them, what in daylight had been a vibrant snow-topped moorland seemed now like a vast ocean of black underneath the star-filled sky. "There," said one of her daughters suddenly, pointing out the windscreen toward a strange, diffuse light in the distance. It seemed to be emanating from the slopes of Cader Bronwen, the mountain's highest peak, like a giant hazy ball that was glowing and pulsating. As Pat recalled later, there were no flames shooting or anything like that, It was very uniform, round in shape, and there were other smaller lights dotted around it too. Pat continued on for a few hundred yards, but was unable to get any closer, and it was much too far away to attempt an approach on foot across the treacherous moorland. Unable to go any further, Pat parked up the car, and together the three of them sat and watched in bemusement as the light continued to pulse, then change colour from white to red to yellow and back again, knowing only that whatever it was they were looking at, it was no crashed aeroplane. After watching for 15 minutes, with nothing else to be done, Pat spun the car around and returned home. This year I'm refocusing on what it means to take care of myself, and it couldn't be easier than with Daily Harvest. Daily Harvest delivers delicious food, all built on organic fruits and vegetables, right to your door. It takes literally minutes to prepare, and I never have to think twice if the food I'm eating is good for me. Daily Harvest works directly with organic farms to freeze their ingredients right on the farm at peak ripeness to lock in nutrients and taste. They never use preservatives, added sugar, or artificial anything. Personally, I'm a big fan of the tart cherry and raspberry smoothies, which are the perfect start to the day. With Daily Harvest, there's something for any time. Smoothies for breakfast, crisp flatbreads for lunch or dinner, and food that's perfect for cooler weather too, like their perfectly roasted harvest bowls and soups. With Daily Harvest, I'm enjoying undeniably delicious, clean food without any of the prep. And whether you're looking to have your daily dose of fruits and veggies, or just want to have a little more time back on your hands, you can too. Get started today. Go to dailyharvest.com and enter promo code UNEXPLAINED to get $25 off your first box. That's promo code UNEXPLAINED for $25 off your first box at dailyharvest.com. That's dailyharvest.com. Earlier that night, 4 miles away on the other side of the peculiar light witnessed by Pat and her daughters, 14-year-old Hugh Lloyd was at home on his parents' farm, relaxing in front of the TV with his sisters and neighbour Enoch Davies. Hugh's parents were out for the evening. Having heard the explosive noise and felt the earth shaking, like many others in the vicinity that night, Hugh's first instinct was to run outside and check on the animals. Relieved to find them surprisingly calm under the circumstances, Hugh stood ponderously for a moment in the cold air, scanning the surrounding hills before making his way back inside. 30 minutes later, there was a knock at the door. An anxious Hugh opened it to find what he assumed was a police officer standing ominously silhouetted in the doorway, while another officer sat in a parked police car behind him. The man introduced himself as a police inspector, explaining that he'd driven up from Barmouth to investigate a possible air crash and was looking for a guide and a farm vehicle to help get him close to the site of impact. With a mix of trepidation and excitement, Hugh was more than happy to offer up his parents' Land Rover. However, since he was too young to drive, neighbour Enoch volunteered to take them up to the farm road. It was only later that Hugh and Enoch realised how strange it was that the officer had arrived only 30 minutes after the explosion, having said he'd come up from Barmouth, a town almost 2 hours' drive away. A short time later, Hugh, Enoch and the officers were making their way further up the mountain through the pitch black, straining for any glimpse of something unusual toward a destination that none were entirely sure of. It was about 9:20 when, just as they were approaching the end of the public road, Enoch spotted a car up ahead blocking the gateway to the farm track beyond. After briefly inspecting the vehicle, with no one around to claim it, the group swiftly pushed it to the side of the road and continued on their way. With Hugh taking over driving duties, the Land Rover continued up the track, its bright beams flashing across tufts of snow and heather as they bobbled over the rough terrain toward the slopes of Cader Bronwen. Despite claiming to be unfamiliar with the area, the inspector pointed suddenly to a spot up ahead and told Hugh to pull over. It was just approaching 10 p.m. when the four of them stepped out into the freezing air on the lookout for any sign of the apparent crash site. And that's when they saw it. A strong white light down on the edge of the valley below, glowing like a halo above a small patch of woodland. The group watched it for a good 15 seconds before the inspector ordered them back into the car and ordered Hugh to try and get them closer. They'd barely made a few hundred yards, however, when a sharp hiss came through the inspector's radio, followed by a voice instructing him to leave the mountain and return first thing in the morning. It was odd, thought Hugh, that they would decide to turn back then, having got so close to what they'd been looking for. But with no desire to argue, he turned the Land Rover round and headed back to the farm. Passing a police car on the way, Hugh pulled up and the officers talked for a moment before that car also turned and followed them back to the farm. With Hugh and Enoch returning home, the police headed off back down the mountain. That night, a three-man crew was also dispatched from the RAF Valley Mountain Rescue Team, arriving in Llandithlo just after midnight. However, after speaking to local police, the team were asked to stand down until the following morning. Back at precisely 8:38 p.m., just over 300 miles away in Edinburgh, Scotland, the Global Seismology Unit of the Institute of Geological Sciences picked up an unusual reading. A tremor emanating from the region of the Berwyn Mountains, registering between 3 to 4 on the Richter scale. The following morning, as news of the strange event began to circulate, a journalist contacted the Institute's senior scientific officer, Dr. Roy Lilwall, asking for his thoughts on whether it was a meteor that had crashed into the mountain. Dr. Lilwall was taken back in surprise at the suggestion, since any meteor causing that large a tremor would have had to have been several tons in mass, and as such would have left little doubt that it was responsible. The RAF Valley Rescue Team set out at first light the following morning and were joined by a small group of local police officers. With a fresh dusting of snow, the search party made their way toward the spot where Hugh and the inspector had been searching the night before. Despite the assistance of two aircraft carrying out a photographic survey of the area from above, they find nothing to account for the mysterious events of the night before. At shortly before 2:15 p.m, the search was called off. By this point, it had also been determined that no aircraft was spotted on radar descending into the region, and none, officially at least, had been declared missing. Elsewhere on the mountain that morning, Dr. Ron Madison and Aniran Evans, scientists from nearby Keele University, encouraged by reports of a possible impact of a celestial object, stumbled across the moor in search of meteor fragments. However, despite uncovering signs of recent disturbance on the surface of the soil, with the snow continuing to fall, their efforts also came to nothing. Later that night, in the village of Gabawin, located just to the east of the Berwyn Mountains, across the border in England, resident David Upton had just stepped out his back door when he noticed an unusually bright object in the sky. After grabbing some binoculars from inside and yelling for his sister and mother to join him, the three of them took it in turns to keep tabs on the object. It was only when they raised the binoculars to their eyes that they were able to make out the shape of it, like a disc that appeared to be split into four distinct colours, red, green, yellow, and purple. After 10 minutes spent observing it, the object eventually disappeared behind a cloud. Over the next few days, as confusion reigned amongst local residents as to just what exactly had taken place, six strangers slowly began making their way through the many local villages, keen to get first-hand eyewitness accounts of the event. Travelling door to door, the individuals introduced themselves as part of a British Geological Survey team and spoke to over 200 locals, asking what exactly they'd seen or heard and whether they'd been alarmed or frightened by the experience. Taking together the size of the seismic activity, the sightings of a burning object seen falling from the sky, and the lack of aircraft debris, scientists eventually came to the conclusion that the explosion and resulting tremor had been the result of an earthquake, which, in a feat of extraordinary coincidence, just so happened to occur at precisely the same time that a meteor had fallen from the sky. Many sightings of peculiar light seen on the mountains that night were later passed off as witnesses confusing the lamps of a group of poachers whose abandoned car had been found by police with something more otherworldly. Before long, however, British ufologists were beginning to question the likelihood of those explanations, and more strange stories were beginning to crop up. Reports of soldiers entering a local farmyard shortly after the explosion was heard, requesting to use the phone because their radio receiver had broken, despite the fact that no military personnel was said to have been involved in the search that night. And one man, Ken Horton of Betws y Coed in North Wales, claimed to have watched what he described as a luminous sphere, roughly 500 feet across, travelling at speed at around 1500 feet, drop straight down into the sea. It was some months later when prominent UFO researcher Jenny Randles, who would later become director of the British UFO Research Association, or BUFORA, received a peculiar package in the post. Consisting of a typed letter and a cassette tape, it had been sent to her by a mysterious organisation calling itself the Aerial Phenomena Inquiry Network, or ARPAN for short. The letter outlined the alarming suggestion that what had crashed in the mountains that night was actually a flying saucer, and both it and its crew, described as tall humanoid aliens, had been extracted from the area by a specialist ARPAN team who'd arrived at the scene soon after. After loading the tape into her cassette player, Randles sat and listened to the bizarre contents, beginning with an introduction from a man with an American accent, calling himself J.T. Anderson, Supreme Commander of ARPAN. It was followed by a series of TV and radio broadcasts about UFOs, spliced in with terrified voices, warning about the dangers of UFOs and their hostile nature. Over the next few years, as the UFO idea gained traction, Randall's interest also grew, so much so that she even moved to the area in the 1970s to find out more for herself. There, she encountered locals who claimed, despite written evidence to the contrary, that there actually had been a military presence on the mountain that night. In the early 1990s, Margaret Fry, working for the BUFORA magazine, interviewed nurse Pat Evans about that most peculiar of nights. But this time, there was a new detail in her story. Shortly after seeing the strange light at the top of the mountain, Pat allegedly now claimed that she and her daughters were confronted by soldiers. Having told her that the road was closed, Pat was ordered to turn round and leave the area immediately. Shortly after the article was published, a panicking Pat called Margaret, demanding to know why she'd added this extra detail to her story, because she hadn't said anything of the sort to her. Confused, Margaret consulted her notes from the interview and was surprised to find, clearly written there, Pat's recollection of the soldiers. Worried that she might have got something wrong, she then spoke to another researcher who'd accompanied her to the interview. She was also convinced that Pat had indeed included this in her story. Could they both have imagined it somehow? Some kind of wish fulfillment, perhaps? Or as some have suggested, had Pat felt suddenly compelled and perhaps persuaded to retract this detail? To this day, Pat maintains that it was never part of her story. Thank you. If you enjoy Unexplained and would like to help support us, you can now do so via Patreon. To receive access to ad-free episodes, just go to patreon.com/unexplainedpod to sign up. Or if you'd like to make a one-time donation, you can go to unexplainedpodcast.com/support. All donations, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Unexplained, the book and audiobook, featuring 10 stories that have never before been covered on the show, is now available to buy worldwide. You can purchase through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Waterstones, among other bookstores. All elements of Unexplained, including the show's music, are produced by me, Richard McLean Smith. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to podcasts, and feel free to get in touch with any thoughts or ideas regarding the stories you've heard on the show. Perhaps you have an explanation of your own you'd like to share. You can reach us online at unexplainedpodcast.com or Twitter at unexplainedpod and Facebook at facebook.com/unexplainedpodcast.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.